Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV. It's Monday. Obviously, we've been doing the final word on a Monday, but with no game. Well, there was games, apparently. International football.
What?
Yeah, no. I had to go on Five Live and do like, and here's the agenda. And I was like, ah.
Yeah.
Harry Kane. I had no idea. So we're going to talk about the season so far. Anyway, as you can see, Tom Dutton's with me already. We've got Ross and we've got Dan with us as well for this one. We're going to kind of go... relatively chronologically with this, but we'll see where the conversation sort of takes us, because I think there's plenty of discussion points. There have been discussion points so far in this period of the season and maybe gone away, and some that remain discussion points, and we'll try and get through as many as possible. But let's kind of rewind, and it feels like an absolute age ago already, Tom. Yeah. I've certainly aged, and two penalty shootouts have had a contributing hand in that. We came into this season... all those many years ago, with a real feeling of kind of like underlying discontent. And some of it comes out of the transfer window. A lot of it was to do with Liverpool's performances in pre-season and what have you. The last pre-season game, we got a really good result against Leon. I think that largely boosted spirits, but it seems mad now to think back. It's like it was a different time.
It was weird. I think we didn't click. Nothing clicked in the attacking aspect, and so everyone was like, this free-flowing football that won us the Champions League last season, and you're looking at it and you're going, why are the pieces not fitting together, and Genie's playing on the left? But that was the whole point, is we didn't have our best players on the pitch because they were playing in international tournaments.
We had the lads who's now playing for Rangers and a lad who's now playing for Bournemouth playing up front for most of them games.
And you, like I said before, Genie and Ox were getting tested on the wings to see how they kind of played. Brewster was trying to come in, but he was very much learning the system for Jürgen Klopp, and it was really interesting because me and Ross went to that Lyon game, and just the change in the mentality of all the players from the back to the front as soon as Bobby and Salah came on, because they knew a ball goes to their feet, they're going to do something. There was just an era of confidence, and then we built on that throughout the season because we knew that these are the world class players that were always going to make the difference.
That was it, wasn't it, Ross? I mean, that game particularly, we had like a 30-minute cameo of the closest to the full strength team we'd seen all pre-season, and it did the business. Everyone went, the people who were worried went, all right, yeah. And the people who weren't worried were just pointing at it and trying to attract the attention of the people who had been, you know, discontent up to that point.
I was on both sides of the fence, to be honest with you. I kind of,
how was that possible, to be honest?
I was on the fence. Okay. Both sides of the argument. There you go.
I don't like the side of the fence. Good.
Because it was the fear, wasn't it, of watching those pre-season games and having just won the Champions League, getting so close to a title, watching all the teams around you, as you said, the transfer market improve, and you're thinking, this is the drop-off that we've got taking us into the new season. People are so desperate, you know, including myself, for a Premier League title, of going, we need to improve, and like, you know, God forbid if one of the front three is injured, or maybe all three of them, we're relying on these people, and these are the performances that they're showing us. Okay, it's pre-season, you can chuck that argument in. But then the other argument was like, well, you don't need to go in the transfer market. You know, it's not FIFA, it's blah, blah, blah. You know, Klopp's proven he can bet this team together, and, you know, that synergy he's got with those players, that can carry into the team. I don't think people are used to that method of just stick together and improve together, and we can grow together.
We're not used, Dan, to being really good at footy. And we're not used to we don't really know how to conduct ourselves in this, like, you know, it's very much in those, like, it's like a go and speak, go and sit and have a pint with your granddad and ask him what it was like when we were brilliant, or your dad as a reminder of how you meant to go about it, because Ross mentioned it was the consistent word that came up all through last season. That word was fear. And it was all of us, and it's anxiety. It's these things that exist in the back of our head, the demons of growing up watching Liverpool fall short for 15 years.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And now all of a sudden, you're dead good, and you're not sure how to handle that, as though if you believe in it, it'll somehow disappear on you or whatever.
No, I think it's because we've been, in a way, burnt before with that. Mm. I mean, we had 07, 08, 13, 14, and that's always in the back. That was in the back of my mind anyway, yeah. Going, we're just going to do it again. My anxiety was all the way up, and I was panicking, and I was just like, oh God, we're the laughing stock again. We've done so well, and now it's all gone to shit. And it's like, hang on, it's just pre-season.
Yeah.
Simmer down, son.
Absolutely.
To be fair, though, you do have 4 cans of Red Bull a day, so that's anxiety in a can, isn't it?
Yeah. You're like 5 more away from that episode of Futurama when Fry drinks all the coffee and basically turns into the Flash. The Community Shield, Tom, it's funny because it ended up being the perfect bridge between pre-season and season, because the first half, we were a bit crap. Mm-hmm. And or again, you're going, oh my God, is this what it's going to be like? Is this now the level between us and Man City? Yada, yada, yada. And then second half, we came out and absolutely battered them. Yeah. And that ended up being what we hoped it would be. That ended up being the staging area for what we've seen so far this season.
Yeah, definitely. And look, that's the toughest game to start with. That is the toughest game. And I really enjoyed the fact that we went in there, played them, and You show everyone then. That's your testing ground. You go, no, there you go. And we came through with flying colours again, with test after test after test that Jürgen Klopp had in front of him, and his team's had in front of him, and it's one of them. I'm kind of happy, like I say, that it was the toughest game, because you're going in there and you can see exactly. You don't want to go into the season and go, oh, we're only playing these little teams, and you're battling them and you're thinking, oh, Billy Big Bollocks, we're going to batten everyone. Then you come up against the team and you go, oh, okay. But instead, we played against City, came through it, and you're right, second half, we were brilliant and controlled the ball against the team of Man City's quality. And I think that gives you so much confidence. It gave me a lot of confidence, even though we lost going into the Chelsea game, into the Super Cup, because I was like, if we can do that against City, we can do that against anyone.
It's that thing for me. I always say this, Ross, in games you need your team to show you something. And that second half showed me everything I needed to know about where that Liverpool side was. And you know, there was still plenty to go. We've had a couple of little, you know, obviously we've had the Alisson injury since then, etc., etc. But you need something to hang your hat on, I think. You just need to see your team show some endeavour and really go for it. And once you've kind of, you shouldn't need this, but you do. It's just, I think it's just a human reaction. So that second half performance, when we went for it, and we really went for it, we decided to go and start swinging for Man City. And I think if we'd done that at any other point, we've constructed good wins against Man City, but we've always constructed them from an underdog's position. I think that was the first time we've gone to them and gone, no. We're as good as you, and actually we think we're better than you. And look, the history books will show that Man City walked away with the Community Shield after the penalty shootout and that, but I don't think anyone walked out of the ground that day. I don't think anyone, well, maybe people watching at home or whatever, might have felt differently, but no, I felt really optimistic in a game that we ultimately lost.
Yeah, I think relieved is how I felt afterwards as well. But then I think you have different stages of reflection. So initially, like, I'm relieved, okay, we got through that. Glimpses of good football as well. But then, like, later on, you're thinking, well, we were resilient in the first half. We didn't get battered 3-4-0. We stuck up to that. Heads never
crazy
dropped.
Crazy chances. Like, yeah, Salah could have had a bag full.
But heads never dropped. And, you know, past times before, heads would go. We'd make mistakes and we didn't do that half time. And again, later on, you're reflecting, thinking, actually, Klopp's changed something there at half time and the players listened to him. And that's been a theme throughout the season so far, of, you know, mixing things up in the middle of the park and, you know, taking teams to task in the second half and taking it up a gear. But I think it's different this season because we had the heartbreak of Kiev going into a season. That plays in the back of your mind. Every time, like, we're not playing great, just like halfway through a game, everyone's chanting with the champions of Europe. Yeah. If you're a player and going, yeah, we are fucking champions of Europe, and, you know, we are better than you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we're starting to create that fear factor. And obviously we go into the season, we have the Norwich game first and foremost, just kind of one at a canter, but we'll kind of group the Premier League stuff together. I want to talk about the Super Cup first, Dan. We were probably worse in that game than we were against Man City, but ultimately, you know, thanks to Tammy Abraham and Adrian, come out with the first part of the season. But that was, I'm exhausted. It's September. and I feel like I've done a full season already. And it's because of that, because the levels of exertion we put ourselves through in that first week and a bit of the season was just superhuman.
Yeah, it was a it came thick and fast, especially with more trophies, potential trophies on the go. And I felt the Super Cup was it. I wasn't really that bothered if we won the Super Cup or not. I was just another trophy. But on the build-up, you realise it's got a knock-on effect to the squad mentality. We pick up another trophy, that's going to make them feel even better, and it's going to start off the season really well, despite the Charity Shield.
Whatever, loss. Yeah, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah.
But that, for me, that game informed the Super Cup for me. Like, we had to win that.
Yeah.
We had to go and win the Super Cup because... Yeah, you can write off the community. I can laugh it off because, let's be honest, we shouldn't have even been in it. We won neither the league nor the FA Cup, so we had no right to qualify for it. We were there by default, so I can let that go. But to then lose the Super Cup when you're the reigning European Cup holders against the reigning Europa League holders, that's an issue.
That's the thing, and now you can say, like, we are the champions. Like, there would have been an argument then
undisputed
to go...
Undisputed.
Exactly, and then obviously we want to do it in December with whatever cup that is, I can't even remember. There's so many, and that's the greatest part of it, but it is funny, like, we got battered in the midfield. Kante battered us that day as well. It was really interesting to watch the... We weren't miles off them that day, I don't think, but it was just the fact that we were getting played through so easy, and that Giroud goal was really easy, to be honest. I know we're going to speak about the defence later, but that was a tiny bit of a worry. But then also, I really enjoyed the resilience. I enjoyed the fact that we got through, and I really enjoyed the fact that we won a penalty shootout for the first time, and to win a trophy. It genuinely allayed a lot of fears in terms of who takes them. I remember saying, I don't like Salah taking pens. And his stats talk. Well, his stats talk. I don't think he's missed one for us when he's taken one. But there was just.
I think he's missed one, hasn't he?
I'm not sure, but it's allayed a lot of that. I know now. If we go into a penalty shootout, I'm not shitting it. Yeah. Every time we went to a penalty shootout, I was thinking we'd lost. As soon as we got one against City, we'd lost in my head. And now there's a that grain of doubt's gone, and I'm fully confident in this team.
It's another example of a game, Ross, bless you, Simon, where I talked about this with Dave Maddock on the newsroom the other week. Liverpool are so good at analysing things. Liverpool are very good at keeping themselves in football matches off their own back. But then when you come in at half time and Klopp's got the analysis and he's got the time to make changes, we come out a much better team. And obviously Bobby Firmino comes into the game. And we were absolutely unplayable for that spell in the start of the second half. And that's I know obviously the game then kind of, it has more ups and downs, it's more roller coaster than that. But another example there where when we had to show our class, we showed that class.
Yeah, I think we've got the quality in the side now, but it's not that analysis does help, but the players are doing it themselves now as well. I think, was it Brighton away last season? Might have been one of the games where, you know, they were taking short corners and it worked out into a goal. And that's kind of the mentality and level that we're at now of having, you know, the Champions of Europe and quality players under your belt, but they're also concentrating on their game and what the opposition are doing to, you know, benefit us as a team.
Yeah,
absolutely. I was. It's mad, isn't it? That was just so senselessly stressful, that game. But which is why the season's one like any other. Unlike any other, I should say, that I've experienced really, Dan, is that thing of. You're meant to ramp up towards this, and I think this is another example where. It's our own stuff. We superimpose our own insecurities onto the players in the squad and what have you. Because I'm not ready for it. Like I don't feel ready. And I didn't play 120 minutes here and there. And I've not run myself ragged playing football matches and being in peak physical fitness. Shock, by the way, to anyone who's seen me. But like psychologically, you're meant to like gear up towards this level of stress. You're meant to have that at the end of the season, the Champions League final. I'm all in on being stressed in Champions League semi-finals and finals and last games of the season. But to have that level of stress in two of the first three games of the season was a thing. But again, it feeds into this notion. Once again, this is a team of elite performers who are just gagging to be on that kind of stage and prove themselves.
Yeah, and I think as fans, we're all with them. We want to claim the top spot again and again and again. But it's just, like you say, it's that fear of... failure, like we've had enough of it, and it's the last thing you want to go back to is just going back to being the nearly guys and we're all hungry for it, and it's great that the players are showing it.
Look
as well
at the celebrations, and you can see how much it means. Because you're dead right, and I think the way in which we won that game made it better. It added value to it because look, let's say Liverpool had won the Community Shield on pens, and let's say we just gone and beaten Chelsea. Just gone beat Chelsea 2-0. I don't think Jordan Henderson does the trophy lift. You know, the Jordan Henderson world-class trophy lift. I think it's a hey kind of situation. Everyone gets on with the night. But it ends up being a massive celebration. We actually give it the respect that the competition's probably, you know, some people have tried not to. You said yourself, you're not arsed.
Yeah.
But I bet by the time we won it, you were dancing around your living room.
Oh, yeah, I was happy as a laddie, mate. I was going for it, especially when the little dance... The little leg shake, I was loving it. It was like, yeah, this is how you should celebrate lifting a trophy. It doesn't matter what trophy it is. If you win it, then you celebrate it.
Yeah, Sport Pacer Trophy, do the same for that. Everton won
that. Oh, I bet they did. Like, yeah absolutely.
But
to be fair, we split the Western Union Trophy, so there wasn't a major need to go mad on that one. Joe Benson kept it in reserve.
It was when we watched City celebrating that Community Shield. And they did it on pens as well, and Klopp made the players watch the City players, and they would have gone, all right, yeah, and you're right, it did impact the amount of effort I think we put into the Super Cup. Of course, you want to win every cup, and it's amazing the fact that we've got the opportunity. We've had the opportunity to win two trophies after not having the opportunity for like being in finals.
But we've had excuses.
Exactly.
We had excuses in both of those games
to
go, oh, well, not our day today. Typical Liverpool. Yeah. Typical bloody Liverpool. We'll just write this off and we'll try and win the next game, lads. Yeah. These lads go, no. Typical, we're redefining what typical Liverpool is. They say fuck you to those situations. Yeah. And if they lose it, they use that as fire to fuel the next win.
Yeah, and it's amazing the progression that we've seen under Jurgen Klopp. And I know we're only talking about this season and so far, but if you look at all the points along the way, and it's all been vindicated by a Champions League win. It has been. If we don't win that, all the tabloids are talking about, oh, Salah wants to leave, Mane wants to leave, there's discontent when there's not. And I think that's vindicated it all, but it just shows now the progression of not just the playing style and the pitch and the quality we've got, but the mentality of all these players. I'm never worried ever when we've played bad in the first half.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact we're going to bounce back. There's talking points that will have been spoken about, that will have been analysed all the way through the first half, and it's getting told to these players who are good enough, and they're top-class players, they're good enough to enact that on the pitch every time.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of a difference in the Super Cup as well. Like, you talk about those players that have won the Champions League and stuff, but Adrian had been there less than a week.
Yeah.
And he played half a game at Norwich and coming in, thinking he's expected to be at that level already and have that mentality.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it even more special about the celebrating. We've done it without a world-class goalkeeper.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the importance, ultimately, of winning it, because you just don't want to pop the air out the balloon, you know, too soon. It allows us to carry on. I mean, look, Liverpool still would have been, the players still would have been as good as they are, but you do have to, there's an air of invincibility that's growing around Liverpool. There's just a confidence, there's a broad-chestedness that's developing, it's starting to happen in the stands as well. I've led lots of people talking about Liverpool's performances so far and how we're just taking it all in our stride so much easier. There's far less grousing on the cop and all that kind of thing, because it's hard to, you're right, the vindications, right? It's hard to be, all of a sudden you're a knobhead for going, big X, Y, and Z. It's like, lads, shut up, Champions of Europe 6 times, just have a little bit of a sing. And be like, all right, yeah, no problem. And that's the Super Cup stuff. The goalkeeper thing could have been a massive issue.
Yeah.
So if Adrian comes in and he gives away the penalty, and then, regardless of whether we wanted to dive into it was actually a penalty or not, it was given. You know, he could have been he's set up to be the villain of the piece. He's set up to be this another bloody dodgy goalkeeper that we brought in on a free. Oh my God, what are we going to do without Alisson? We've lost the Super Cup because we've lost Alisson. Oh, have a go at Liverpool. Give them loads of shit. Chelsea are crap, they're only the Europa League. Oh, well, it proves that Liverpool weren't really good enough to win the Champions League, because if the Europa League champions can beat them, yada, yada, yada. Whereas all of a sudden, there's none of those doubts. And all the potential doubts are starting to be sort of shied away. Let's pick up on the Adrian stuff, Dan, because he's right. You know, we lose Alisson in the Norwich game, and the old fears once again. You're looking at this season. You're looking at a season where Liverpool probably need to be perfect. This world-class goalkeeper that we've got, And all of a sudden, there's a, you know, you're facing 2 or 3 months out on the sidelines. There's no mark lad we've brought in. Not even good enough to play for West Ham anymore. But look, he has the mistake against Southampton. It's an absolute shocker of a mistake. But he won us the Super Cup. And he, and I think, by and large, you know, a couple of moments here and there, I think we're able to excuse them, as Ross kind of intimates, because he's not been there long, and he's done good things in that time as well.
Yeah, especially with keepers, the spotlight's always a bit harsher on them because they're the last line of defence. But they're always going to make mistakes, and I think Ross said, I think you said it a while back, that he had no baggage really coming into it, whereas Mignolet and Karius have an absolute shit ton of baggage.
They're nothing but baggage, let's be honest, particularly Karius. And that's the thing about it. The baggage thing's really interesting, isn't it, Ross? Because if we just kept Mignolet, and Mignolet had made those mistakes, it's just he's a known entity. You know what it does. You know what he does to the side.
It's a mentality shift, isn't it? Because it changes as good as the rest. And the goalkeeper sense, if they came on, all those people we were talking about before, you're just going in the stands going, fuck, here we go again, something's going to happen, you don't trust them. That resonates to the players as well, because I bet they think the same thing.
Yeah.
Regardless of what anyone says at Champions League final in Kiev, I bet people are fuming with Karius. Yeah. So I would have been, and sure they should be. So I think
Adjun's got enough personality, I think he's a big enough character,
that
I think he's actually, and it's hard to tell, look, he might prove to be a massive bellend and not, you know, and not fit in the dressing room. Maybe a year from now, if this happens, you might be in a Mignolet-style situation, but a combination of freshness, plus the fact that he's clearly, as this... You know, he has charisma, doesn't he? Yeah. And I think charisma actually covers up for a lot of those kind of mistakes.
And the players talk to him well as well, because when we won the Super Cup, sorry, to let him take it to bed with him, that's like a really nice touch for me.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Or just saying you've been here less than a week, you practically won us this.
Yeah.
Take with you, you're part of us now. I think for team building confidence, I think that's huge. Like, he made the mistake at Southampton, but I think the thing with like Alisson is in your mind, you think he won't do it again. And you're thinking, well, hopefully, touch wood, Adrian's made that mistake now. Don't fuck around with the ball. And don't win. Danny Ings is running towards you. Yeah. Fucking get rid
but
of
he's
it.
He's done enough in that short spell of time. Tom, the thing with Alisson is, people go, well, Alisson made mistakes. Alisson's the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
So if Alisson makes mistakes, you've got no choice but to shrug them off, because there is no one better for that job. So you have to accept that mistakes happen. And Adrian has actually just done just enough in that short spell of time that we can go, well, we know he's not our first choice goalkeeper. We've not seen enough of him to know he's going to be shit.
Yeah.
So there's enough there, and again, he's got enough of personality that I think we're able to swallow it and just accept him for what he is.
It's you've got to temper it with the way we play out of the back is hard to play. Not many teams do that. Yeah. A lot of teams will just hit it long to a big man and challenge for it in the midfield.
Did anyone see, and I know we've laughed at the international football thing, but the England's first goal against Bulgaria, they try the short, the blank looks around the room says no. They try the short goal.
Played.
They try the short goal kick thing, Bulgaria, and they're doing it just to do it, and the goalkeeper basically tries to play a pass to the left back and misses him by 2 metres. And it, what is what we consider a simple pass, but it's not. It's an underrated quality, and Adrian is not amazing, but he's fine.
But again, his distribution has been pretty good as well. It has been pretty good. Obviously, you're tempering that with Alisson
is the
best goalkeeper in the world. And then you've got Ederson, who you're watching week in, week out, who's the same. Fantastic. There's not many goalkeepers who can do that. We knew that. We knew Simon Mignolet was a good shot stopper. He's a good Premier League level goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He's not good enough for Liverpool in that system.
Yeah.
So for the fact that he's come in, had to learn a new system, I think he stayed away from international duties and all that to learn, to stay with the team. And get drilled in the classroom, because you've got to know exactly where your players are going to be, what you need to do in this situation. Because Virgil van Dijk's going to roar at you if you do something wrong. We've seen it when Virgil came; he had it under control, and Adrian came out and just kicked it straight to the other player. You've got to get them little things out. But the fact that look, he's been here for so little time and thrust into the action, the fact that he's been able to put in this level of performance is fantastic.
And he's made important saves as well.
Yeah.
Like the Super Cup, he makes an absolutely brilliant full, you know, close range toward the back end of that game that effectively, you know, sets us up. He's made important saves, he's made claims, he's dominated his box. He's not been perfect, damn, but he's... And all of those things, it's not like... Because that was always Karius' issue, is that he suited our general style of play. He was quite good with his feet. So he was fine, his distribution. He didn't unsettle what we were trying to do compared to Mignolet. But he didn't have enough moments for your lay person to hang the hat on and go, oh, I can see that he has got your basic level of understanding of what a goalkeeper is. You should save the ball. And Adrian's done tons of that. So, you know, he and again, it comes back to this thing. I think being a bit of a character, I think we're more forgiving of characters as goalkeepers because when you make, when you've got no personality and you make a mistake, you're just shit. Whereas if you're a bit mad and you make mistakes, it's okay because he's a bit mad, isn't he? You know what I mean?
I mean, you just got to look back at our previous goalkeepers that we all love, Rainer. He was a character. He had
Bruce Grobbelaar.
Yeah, Grobbelaar, the crazy South African. He's just, we love crazy goalkeepers, even despite the fact that sometimes they make our asses go 50p, 20p. Mm-hmm. We love that.
Not the, well, we love characters, don't we? And I think in goal, I say in goalkeepers, you've got to be a bit crazy. And I think Adrian fits the bill. I think Klopp doing the Adrian. Like Rocky.
The worst part is, though, the worst part about him is I constantly get him mixed up with Alisson and Adrian. For some reason, I can't get it through my head. It's the one letter.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
How selfish of them.
I know, yeah,
absolute pricks. It's another example. There've been multiple examples of the people I put heavy trust in my business saying very, very simplistic things that they get wrong on a daily basis. But now let's move into the league. Played 4-1-4, top of the league. We haven't lost the league game since January. We haven't even drawn one since Dev in March.
13 wins on a bounce.
Yeah.
Paul, I remember you saying a long time ago, we need to start breaking records as a Liverpool side, and since then, consistently, all we've done is break records. And it's they're getting better and better and better. One of our central defenders didn't get dribbled past for the whole season. Are you messing?
Yeah.
And now it's a massive talking point when he does, and it's going, we haven't lost it at Anfield for however long. Andy Robertson hasn't lost a game at Anfield. Sadio Mane, I don't know if he's lost a game for a while at Anfield. You're looking at all this and you're going, what? How are we managing this? Every time a new stat gets put out, and you're like, wow, this is ridiculous.
Klopp's got the first at 300 points in the least amount of games as well. I think it's like
fastest Liverpool manager to 300 points.
Yeah, 146 games, yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It consistently, we're building and building and building. It's fantastic.
And I like that some of the talking points again. I'd forgotten this was one, and it's mad. Because it's only been like a week and a half since it was, or 2 weeks since it was a talking point. But the defence thing, let's pick up on this because because I think there's a few talking points around it. Liverpool's defence being weak and this high line that we were playing that was apparently going to cause us loads and loads of problems. My theory on this, Dan, is that we're trying to get better as a possession side. But look at the teams that we've played so far this season. Man City, we played. I mean, Norwich came and gave it a go. So Norwich didn't come and defend. Norwich came to take the game to us. Played Chelsea, Southampton again, another good possession-based side that gets in your face. Arsenal, and albeit they changed the style a bit, but still a side that wants to try and attack and score goals. Yeah, it wasn't until we got to Burnley that we come up against a team that were like, no, attack, are you insane? No, we're gonna sit in, we're gonna frustrate and cause problems. And yet Burnley, that Burnley game was the first time we've really truly comfortably dominated Burnley, and I think you know, it's not. This is why. It's because Liverpool are now so much better as a side who are tasked with winning football matches than we've ever been.
Yeah, especially with the inclusion of the bringing in the high line. It's just it takes time to bed that in with the players, get that sorted out. And of course, so there is going to be that bedding in period. But you trust the players to like get on it quick. I mean, it's. I forgot the point I was going to make.
Well, yeah, there's a percentage of sides that we're going to face, Ross, who are the vast majority of teams we're going to face this season are going to think, don't fancy this today. And they're going to trust that their best chance of getting anything out of the game is to defend for their lives, keep a clean sheet, maybe nick one from a set piece. Because that is the best way to do things. We're just, on the balance of things, it hasn't fallen that way in the first clutch of games of the season, but my feeling is we'll see again this decision to just push everything up a little bit higher up the pitch. It's a tactical shift to just crush teams to death.
Yeah, I think it's all done on analysis like you mentioned before. I think everyone always says, you know, what's the best Liverpool team? I don't think we've got one. I think it depends on who you play. Much like the tactical stuff of going, these Burnley sides that we come up against, we couldn't break them down. we've learned from those past games, going, actually, you know, we know how to beat these teams now, we'll happily keep possession. As an opposing team, I don't know what you're supposed to do, because like you said there, like, go out and attack, well, we're just going to get fucking bummed.
Yeah.
You know, if you sit back and defend, well, it's just going to keep going. Sorry. Yeah. It's just going to keep coming, isn't it? It's wave after wave of attack. I think that's something we've got much better at. And the high line stuff, I think you're right, it's built on trust, and, you know, it's different this season with VAR coming in. That's like to our advantage, because we trust each other so much to stay in line, mm-hmm. and let people, okay, I think City made runs from deep in the Community Shield, which kind of punished us. I don't know why more teams haven't done that, but, you know.
Well, the more teams haven't got the Man City's level of ability.
No, exactly, yeah.
They don't have Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva playing the passes, and they don't have Raheem Sterling, Riyad Mahrez, and, well, obviously Leroy Sané, you know, but, you know, with the pace, getting in behind.
But then we've got the defence. I think people questioned, you know, Gomez starting certain games because he's got the pace to make those runs back. You know, another record, Virgil van Dijk, one of the fastest people in the Champions League last year. Oh, he was the fastest person. You know, we're fine with whatever we do. We can play high line, and the defenders have adapted to that.
Yeah.
And we've got the runners in midfield, as much as people don't like the Henderson or, you know, the Brexit midfield. The amount of work that they do to run back and track back and support people.
Has anyone heard any complaints about a midfield that had, you know, Ryan Alderman and Henderson?
Exactly.
And now I know for Beat.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know, made himself a mainstay, which I think is a step in the right direction. But no one's asked anymore. No one bats an eyelid if you, because we're picking two from three from Milner, Wijnaldum, Henderson every game in that midfield now, and no one's asked because they're all class.
Just touching back on the defensive side of things, and we played so much football, we didn't have time. I remember everyone was talking about it, like, we've got a day's rest where he can go on holiday, and then we're back into gearing up for another game of football. So we didn't have time to sit on the training pitch and practice routines, and it showed on the pitch. It did. We were shaky at the back, we were. But then in between Southampton and Arsenal, we got our break, and we were like, OK, this Arsenal game's the test, and we just went, there we go. Look what a bit of time on the training pitch where everyone can analyse. I'm talking about first half and second half. Instead, we just went, what's been going wrong in all these games? Oh, we've been letting this through. Why have we been doing that? Fix it.
Arsenal should have been the team, one of the teams to cause us problems with that thing. But you're right, a little bit of work. We crushed the life out of Arsenal, particularly that first half.
Yeah.
Like, that was just because we attacked the cop end first half that game, because I think they won the toss or whatever, they chose to kick that way, and it's so fresh in my mind. Arsenal just couldn't get out.
Yeah.
They just could. Danny Ceballos, who was meant to be their number 10, this all of this incredible number 10 we've got, everyone was raving about him from the week before. He was getting dispossessed in past the line of his own 18-yard box. You know, in the corner flag, basically getting harried, losing the ball, because we did that to him, because we were so good.
Arsenal's an interesting one, because that's the first time that they've ever played a diamond, and that shows what teams are trying to do, thinking, well, they see how we play, let's try something different. And it just completely punished them. But even at half time, having 45 minutes of letting Trent and Robin have the ball as much as they want in 50 yards of space, they didn't change it. They just carried on.
Arsenal's game plan, they looked at that and went, right, we will let Liverpool cross the ball in and just trust our centre halves to win the headers. That's basic. That was what their game. And to be fair, the game plan was largely solid until it gets undone. By is it the corner we score from the first goal? So we that's the thing about us is that we scored the most goals from set pieces of any team certainly from corners last season. We've got that in our armoury as well. We're now the complete outfit because. You look at like Roy Hodgson's sides. It was one thing we were good at when Roy Hodgson was Liverpool manager. We were really good. We were much better at set pieces. Really good. We were better than we'd been because it's the short blanket syndrome. If you've got a limited time on the training field and you're constantly having churn in your squad, you could only work on so many things. So you can work on styles of attack and play, or you can work on defensive positioning, or you can pour time into X, Y, and Z, and bang average managers work on defensive shape. And they pour loads of time into set pieces, the Tony Pulis's, the Roy Hodgson's, etc. And they have to just let their attacking players kind of figure it out. We've got all of that going for us now. So if you sit in, you sit deep, you say, okay, we'll trust that Roberto Firmino's not going to dominate aerially. Well, Trent will just take a Bosch corner, and one of our big centre halves will just come and bang it in instead. And that's the difference. But let's continue with the defensive stuff though, Tom, because. You know, we started Joe Gomez, and I was a bit surprised that we'd done that, to be perfectly honest, because I felt a little bit sly on John Matter because I thought he was exceptional last season. Gomez didn't really take his opportunity, I don't think. I think, obviously, he's trying to get back into match sharpness. You know, he missed the back end of last season, didn't really regain his place after he got the leg break against Burnley. I think he was put in there for his pace, I think that made sense. But Joel Matip has come in and he's just picked up exactly where he left off.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. You've seen the progression of Joel Matip throughout his Liverpool career, and you've seen him just get stronger in the air, more physical, putting himself about, and he's always had the passing. That's the one thing that he's fantastic at. He loves striding out and all that, but it's the balls that they're really hard balls to play. You watch it from the TV or whatever, and you're like, okay, I can see that pass. If you're down there, on the pitch level, that is such a hard thing to do, and he does it consistently. And with Joe Gomez, it was strange because obviously he played quite a bit of the pre-season. I think he played most of them when he started coming back in. And I was thinking, okay, good. But then you saw our defensive issues were not down to him. I don't think you can be that harsh because, look, it's a whole unit working as one. But there were times when you'd be like, why are you not covering last season? You were there. You were snuffing that out straight away, and there was a few ones where you're like,
There was just a couple of composure things, I think, particularly that Man City game. And that's no fault of his, because City have got tons of pace, very well drilled. They know how to get in your face and cause you problems, and just a couple of sloppy passes. Now the thing is, or particularly in the Super Cup, everyone was guilty of that. Matip was guilty of that. Van Dijk was guilty of that. Gomez right back in that game was guilty of that as well. But on an encouraging note, Ross, it's just a Matip thing. I mean, bagging his goal last week as well is one thing. The biggest criticism we had of Joel Matip was he was too passive. Yeah. I think he kind of... Van Dijk's dead cool. And I think Matip is a bit similar in that regard. He lets things develop. He doesn't dive in. But there's a very fine balance between being a guy who lets things develop until the point where you have to strike and you let things get away from you because you've not been proactive in defence. And I think he has been a bit meek at times. I mean, it's led to some of the best out of context Joel Matip memes and clips, whatever. But he gets dead angry now, and I love that.
Yeah, I think his physicality is the one that was his criticism for me. Whether it's in the air or on the ground, just thinking he's a bit flaky. He's just, you don't trust him, do you? I think, you know, Lovren's obviously pushed him to raise his game and stuff like that. But an element of his game where he wasn't good at, he's improved on them. Consistency is probably the big one for me. I think now, like the past few weeks, I've only just stopped doubting him. Yeah. I'm thinking, you're going to get injured, your form's going to go at some point. But it's been 4 or 5 months of Joel Matip playing at his peak.
The last injury he had for us was a broken collarbone.
Yeah.
And he got that going up for winning ahead of the last minute of the Napoli game, which is one of them where we needed nothing but concentration and being physical and tough.
But I think that also plays into the doubts that we had in pre-season of not signing players, thinking Joe Gomez is injured quite a lot, Matip's injured quite a lot, and you know he will have been analysed by the team as well, thinking, you know, he's fine, they trust him. We just don't get that information, so we only see it for face value of thinking, oh shit, he might get injured again, but he's been superb for me.
Yeah, absolutely. We've also got UEFA defender and player of the year Virgil van Dijk there, Dan, who shouldn't be underestimated. Yeah, and you know, in addition to that, obviously we've seen Alisson picked up best goalkeeper. We are for the first time. Liverpool have had, when we've had really good Liverpool sides, we've had, like, Suarez was the best player in 13-14. And we had good players around that, but they were either kids or, you know, you got Gerrard in the twilight of his career. Go back 08-09, we had a phenomenal side, but the Torres-Gerrard axis was the thing that drew all the players. You go back to 2001, it's Michael Owen, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We've got 7 players on the shortlist for the FIFA Pro World 11 this year. Like, that's because we have got that shows you just how good the quality is spread out throughout the side.
It just shows the credit of Klopp, his coaching, Michael Edwards, the recruitment policy. We know what kind of players we have to get now. With the in-depth analysis that I can only dream of seeing for the criteria of what makes a good Liverpool player and who we're going to go for, it's absolutely outstanding. And the fact that everyone was slagging us off for the price tag of Van Dijk when we first got him, we were the laughing stock, and he's laughing now. He's the best defender in Europe. Yeah. We got him.
And what's great as well, it's not even up for debate.
No.
Like, you know how we've had good players and we think they're good. And like, let's use Jordan Henderson as an example of this. Like, if you see what's good about Jordan Henderson, you've always seen what's good about Jordan Henderson. But there'll always be people, even in the old fan base, who don't agree. What I love is that we've now got a collection of players who it's just accepted across Europe. Like, you can have a debate between Alisson and Edison, and maybe you want to throw in, maybe some people still want to throw Neuer in, or you want to throw Oblak in, or you know, all these players. But you're splitting hairs to say who's the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
He's up there.
Yeah.
Van Dijk, he's right up there. Andy Robertson, he's right up there. Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's right up there. Salah, Mane, Firmino.
We're the gold standard, Paul. Yeah. That's what we are. People are comparing their players to ours, going, oh, well, he's really good. He's like Van Dijk. And it's like, well, he's like Van Dijk. He's not as good. Like, all that Maguire stuff going on, and there's always comparisons with our players. We're always talked about because they are the best players in Europe. If you're looking around the world at performances and stuff, like, Van Dijk was sat next to Messi and Ronaldo and beat them.
Yeah.
And I know they're coming towards the end of their career, and that's fine. But what other player does that? Yeah. No one else does that. And it's all consistent performances as well. It's not having a good game here and there. It's consistently playing to an elite level. And you're watching players like Sadio Mane, who aren't even rated as maybe not the best player in our team. He is so, so good at football. It's unreal. Like, you're watching him play and you're like, you take the game by the scruff of the neck more than any other player that I ever watch. And then you look, Robertson and Trent haven't been fantastic this season, but they've still got assists. They've still produced chances. And that's the thing is, on their bad day, they're still creating goals.
Yeah.
And not many players can do that.
We've got global superstars now in our team, Ross. And we've not bought them. It's not like when PSG go out and buy Neymar, you know, because they want to sell a shit ton of shit on the promotion and all that kind of stuff. It's not like Mario Balotelli. It's not people who are superstars for just, you know, when you're baffled as to why they have got that level of reputation. They've become superstars on our watch. We've made them into that. And you know, when Virgil van Dijk has got his face plastered on the side of a building outside Lime Street, you know, this is the thing. These are now the biggest athletes for Nike and Adidas, which matters. You know, it matters. These are the global superstars of the game. These are the players that make you. Like, when the new FIFA comes out, like, I'm gutted that Liverpool aren't licensed on Pro Evo anymore, because I like that, but there's a value to being it on FIFA. You know, Liverpool are going to be the team. People are going to, you only ever go Barcelona or Real Madrid, you know, or Man City or whatever. People only ever choose. Liverpool are going to be one of those teams, because when you've got these global superstars, it's automatically accepted. They get the best ratings. They get books made about them, and they get, you know, boots named after them. They get all this stuff. We've got that for the first time in a very long time.
And that's just another long line of positives to take from this Liverpool side. I think we've seen, you know, pundits, opposition fans are recognising that, are going, actually, they are the good players. You know, you can have a reasonable debate with an opposition fan and go, actually, you know, use our deck good. And that gives me confidence as a fan to think, because of that fear of doubt before, going, actually, not things will go wrong, but are we that good? And people going, actually, no. And when people talk about the title race, You know, we're four games in, people going, well, Liverpool might do it this season. And you're thinking, good, people being, are recognising how good we are.
It's a daft little thing, but like you go in, I was in the book section in Tesco's this week with the kids, and in the kids section, there's these books, like it's like superstars or something, and there's a Ronaldo one, and there's a Messi one, and last season there was a Salah one, and now there's a Mane one. And it, you know, they're the things that people, someone would make a Sadio Mane book, and in a series of the world's best players, and people obviously will go out and buy it because there's interest in, and people care enough. People, his reputation is so high that there's a market for this kind of stuff outside of it. Just you just servicing Liverpool fans. It sounds like a daft thing, but it's
boss. It's funny. I remember we talked about who do we have in our spine, and we didn't have a world class spine. It's not even that we have a world class spine anymore. We have a world class like branches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's mad. Everyone in that team
we've
is
got
top
world class roots.
Yeah.
Is what we've got with the back five. Yeah. And then you've got the things that spread out from there are incredible.
And
as well,
the squad stuff that was getting spoken about so much, you're seeing now. And that's why I hate the transfer window, and the preseason can't really tell you everything. Everyone's going, oh, we've not done this and this and this, and I'm like, wait. Wait till you see what they can do on the pitch. There's players that can play in different positions. There's players that can do this and that and that. And look, it might all fall apart straight after we film this and blah, 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 and we'll lose every game since then.
Probably not.
But, you know, probably not. Probably, we're probably going to win the league. But what? I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah,
it can get clipped up if we don't, that's fine. But I fully believe in this side. A lot of people are going, the season predictors, and like, I don't want to put Liverpool winning the league because... frankly, they're scared of saying it. That's why, yeah. Ross. because they don't want to say it because of the fear of getting laughed at and stuff. It doesn't matter anymore. We are good enough. Like, say, to believe in the team.
Exactly. And they shouldn't... Yeah. You know, it is, but it's not that Liverpool are guaranteed to win the league, because they're not, because no one is.
No.
But it would now be shocking if they weren't in the title conversation. Yeah. That's where they've got themselves to. The last big talking point of this spell before we kind of move on to a couple of other things, the Mane Salah spat at Burnley. Ross, I missed this at the time, and obviously went back. I had to go back and watch it. And obviously, it was the big talk. It was like the big thing everyone wants to talk about. It kind of took a little bit of the attention away from what a good win it was at Burnley. I love it. I genuinely love it. Now, We did the book last year, looking at the reactions of people throughout the season, and either Mane being selfish or Salah being selfish was a discussion point last year as well. The thing why I love it is because everyone's pissing themselves laughing. Mane's dead angry, and like Klopp's laughing his head off. Firmino's pulling funny faces.
Milner took the piss on Instagram.
Taking the piss on Instagram. Lallana's sat there laughing. It shows that. Because there's one thing about Sadio Mane that you could say is maybe lacking. It's confidence at times. And I don't think he behaves like a player who's as good as he is, whereas Salah does. And I think that it shows me that, you know, he's hungry, he's desperate for it, and he's right to be pissed off. Because Mo Salah should just bloody square it to him and let him score. Now, it's a problem if it becomes two individuals playing for themselves. But it shows to me that Mane gives a fuck. And I think at times Mane is a little bit too playful, a little bit too daft, and laughs a little bit too much. I think it's an encouraging sign.
I'm exactly the same as you. I love the fact that Mo Salah took the shot as well, the fact that he's desperate to score as well. I said, I made a comment on the news show last week while we were away. So the biggest problem that we've got at the minute is the fact that our striker's pissed off that he hasn't scored another goal when we're already 3-0 up.
Yeah.
We're already top of the league.
Yeah.
That shows how far we've come as a team, because there's fucking worse problems in the world, isn't there?
Yeah.
Good on him. Be pissed off. Be angry. And I'm sure he's like that behind closed doors. Again, we just don't see that. But for him to show it, and I think, you know, we joke about it, people laughing it off, I think that's the best way to handle it. Because if someone made the wrong face at that point, it gets blown up even further. And it's not even a story anymore, is it? Because it won't be, because he'll just score against Newcastle probably and it'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at it so far this season. So Salah's played 6, scored 3 with 2 assists. Mane's played 5, scored 4, 1 assist. Firmino played 6, scored 2, 3 assists. Things are ticking over quite nicely so far, really, aren't
But that's
they?
The thing of how far we've come. You know, we had like Aspas, Balotelli and Ricky Lambert, who couldn't create one chance in a game. He's creating, you know, 10, 13 chances in one game, we're going to score goals.
Bobby Firmino's nearly scored the best goal of the season, like
in
four
every,
times.
In every game.
He keeps driving over their kicks, and the confidence that must be flowing through this team. I think you're right.
He looks so lean this season. So you know, we've always joked that Bobby Firmino always seems to come back with a bit of a tummy, doesn't he? You know what I mean? Like, he has a bit too much fun in the summer. As looking again, watching back the Burnley thing, he just looks sinewy, he looks faster. He looks just, and he's been, that's the best. Bobby Firmino, I mean, look, the goal return's not as good as the other lads so far, but he's got the best assist return of the lads so far. That's the best Bobby Firmino I've seen in probably about half a season, because I think he laboured at times last
that
year.
Copper America are taking it to a level as well. That means like much more to those people. Yeah. You know, they're playing for the country and winning trophies.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's mad if you look. I mean, Salah's played six, Firmino's played six, Mane's played five. That's five goals they've all created. Yeah. And you know what I mean? That's 15 goals from our front three in what, six what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Maths.
Well, it's seven. It doesn't matter, but you know what I mean.
in games.
We're creating so much stuff. And that's only the front three. Then you've got Jordan Henderson assisting, coming up from behind. Then you've got just the balls from the fullbacks. Everything, as you say, is taking over. It's all boss. Now that we can see it on the pitch, and you can see them enacting it.
Trent, Matip and Van Dijk have all got goals this season as well.
There you go, yeah.
Trent, yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, sure. It adds to that, doesn't it? If you don't rely on your front three, even though you're creating score chances every game,
you've
got people behind you doing it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, top of the league, it's an interesting one, because I think it's funny that Man City have conceded the same amount but scored more, and obviously are 2 points behind us in the league, which is brilliant. It's the gaps to everyone else that I think are the most encouraging thing, which tells you that it feels like this is a trend was set last season, and this is just a continuation of the trend that it's likely to be us in City. It's far too early. We shouldn't really, I always bang this drum, and yet here I am looking at the league table. Shouldn't really take too much from the league table, but I don't think it's telling of who's going to finish top or second.
No.
I think it's telling who's going to be the top two teams in the league. The fact that, you know, Man United are only on 5 points, so we're 7 points ahead of Manchester United already so far. Chelsea have, an R thing for our sheet here. I had to go down to 11th just to include Chelsea in there, who are on the same. Arsenal only back there on 7 points, etc., etc. Tottenham Hotspur. You know, there's a gap there forming. Man City will go ahead of us at some point this season, and we might well wrest back control at some point. But so far, so good.
It's going to be exciting. Last season was exciting. Ultimately, it was horrible because we lost. But it was one of the best. We were pushing. Each team was pushing each other to such a high level that I've never seen before.
I feel more prepared for it this season.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't. It felt like it was then or never.
Yeah.
You know, somehow, and everything was so hyper-analysed America, and I'm sure it'll get worse as the season progresses, but I don't know, having gone through it once, Dan, and now that I have a greater trust in this side to be as good as they are, maybe it is just me, but I feel loads more relaxed about the whole situation this
time around. With last season, it just seemed like that was our year, and everyone was putting their emphasis on that year, because we've only ever had one year.
Yeah.
We've never had an elongated run.
Yeah.
So With last season, it was great. Like Tom said, it was shite because we lost, but on the whole, it was some of the best football I've ever seen. And this season, it's like you said before, it's as if we've not stopped. We've just kept on going, and we kept on the form. And it's going to be great this season.
Absolutely.
I'm not like that before every game, though. Like the Norwich game, I was bricking it before that. I've just just win. But I think the back end of last season, where you're watching two teams for for the rest of the remainder of the season, I've started doing that already, because before getting to the season, and the pressure's on, I shouldn't do.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, I'm not watching the whole of City games, but I'm looking out for their results going, okay, we've got 2 points there, and then we're going to that game, you're kind of working all out.
I think the expectation now is City are going to win every game.
Yeah.
And Liverpool are probably going to win every game as well. And then there's just going to be, every now and again, there's going to be an unpredictable twist or turn, a little shock. So like VAR, the Spurs. Man City did not deserve to not win that game. Man City played Tottenham Hotspur completely and utterly off the park that day. Battered them from pillar to post. Should have been 5-0. Should have absolutely cruised it, but somehow never. And look, fair play to you, Ross, because like I say, I'm sure there's tons of people who are feeling exactly the same way. But for me, it's like, the weird comparison to it is the first time we did a deadline day show and it was like 8 hours and I was fucking ruined and I had no voice left and I slept for the next day. And then the next time we did one, I went out for a beer afterwards, the next one, because my body was more adapted to it. It knew how to handle those kind of situations. And that's what it kind of feels like. I was worried because I was so tired going into the season that the Liverpool players would feel the same, like they're going to be finished. Whereas the more I see us play, the more I feel like if there's any team likely to defy the expectations of like and the common prevailing logic of we'll fall apart in the back end of the season, this is the side most likely.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about progression a little bit before, but we have so many tests, we've gone through all that, so we've built up a thick skin, we've gone through to finals, we've lost finals, we've gone through all the way to Champions League defeats and then Champions League victories and all these other different bits along the way going, oh, can we play against the Burnley side who are going to kick us pillar to post? Yes, we can. Can we play against the free-flowing Man City side? Yes, we can. Can we do it against these teams that play low block? And we've learned how to do that. We've slowly added more things to our game to the point now where I think this is the season, hopefully, where you just go, okay, everything that has happened before us gets shown on the pitch. And look, we might not win. We might not. And that's fine too. But then that'll just be another step in progression for next season when we do go on and win it. It's all taken. I don't think this is the be-all and end-all anymore. I'm not gutted if we don't win anything because I know we'll take that experience and learn from it. It's amazing.
And we've already won something.
Yeah, so that's been vindicated. That mentality has been vindicated because you can then go, there you go. Now you can say Jordan Henderson's a good player when you couldn't before. Mm-hmm. You get lambasted. Now you've got, well, no, because he's a Champions League winning captain. And this player's done this, and this player's done this. And before it was like, well, what's that led to? And you're thinking, okay, I get that argument, that's fine. But now I can say, well, that's led to 97 points, and that's led to a Champions League final 2 years
well,
on the bounce.
Look at it, because it's funny, because even people go, well, the people still go, Jimmy Traore won the Champions League. It's like, yeah, but look, we cleared out so many of the crap players that won the Champions League just by being present. We're shipped out. You know, I mean, it's unfair to label Smeaton amongst them, but that, you know, he moves on after that. Didier Mann was great and integral that, but he wasn't the levels that we ended up getting Mascherano in, yeah. You know, for that job. We improved upon that, whereas we've won that. And Jürgen Klopp's gone, no, this side's great. He's added that, again, vindication for all the players within there. On the individual players then, Ross, you've been doing player ratings so far this season. Any standouts who's come out top so far?
There was two. Fabinho was one of them. I think he's been instrumental. The one was Bobby, but I don't know, that's just biased because he's my favourite player. Yeah. And he's tried to score those goals. But I think even when the Chelsea game, he got quite a high rating. He came on as a substitute and completely changed the game. And I think you mentioned the Lyon game before. He's just a glue that makes everything work.
He's been brilliant this season. The Fabinho stuff I think is really interesting though, because I talked about this last season, and when people were saying, like, particularly the transfer window, Dan, like, Liverpool haven't improved, they haven't done X, Y, and Z. What I was kind of saying was, Man City are settled. Man City had their settled team, their best player. Everyone knew what Man City's best team was. Whereas Liverpool didn't bring in Fabinho really until mid-season. Mm. He wasn't truly, he was still in rotation with Jordan Henderson for that, and Gini Wijnaldum actually for that six until the real tail end of that season. So we now, this is where we've moved on. Fabinho has started this season as our first choice number six. He's 100% established, and it's actually no shock that he's top in player ratings because, again, he's now part of that the roots that we were talking about. He's embedded in that side. He's a rock in that first 11 now.
I find it strange. I'm not used to the way Klopp really does his training and whatnot, because I'm used to, like, you buy someone in and you throw them straight in.
Yeah.
But with Klopp, it takes a very long time to bed them into that system, and it's hard to show that patience for it. But in the long run, it just works time and time again. It's absolutely incredible. And I was worried myself in the transfer window. Oh, we've not strengthened. We've not got any backups or anything. But it's just Klopp going, I've got faith in them because they're still learning all the systems.
I think the Fabinho thing was overlooked as well in the summer. I think I was probably guilty of it as well because of exactly what you just said there. Because he was so good and the game's come thick and fast. You forget about the start of last season, thinking, oh, no, he wasn't there. And you're thinking, well, he is now. And it will only get better because I don't think Naby Keita's really settled in well. Chamberlain's had a year out as well, and you think you don't know what you're going to get out of them. But, you know, everyone's like, oh, no, new signings, you can't say that. They are.
It's not like new signings.
It's squad improvements.
Yeah, it's that thing. We always forget this. Because I remember this time last year, everyone was criticising Liverpool for not being deadly. And people were saying, well, we were much better last season. Like, people look at the end of last season and they presume that we were like that for the entire year. And that's the thing. They ignore the fact that you get better as the season goes on. You're always better in the second half of seasons than you are in the first half of seasons because people being embedded, players getting up to speed, players getting up to match sharpness and fitness and all these kind of things. And we'll have it again a bit this season. You know, there's people forgetting. You know, well, Fabinho, yeah, of course he's Fabinho in the midfield. He's only really new. This is his first full season as a Liverpool player, and it's not because he was here this time last year, but it's his first season as an established first team Liverpool player. So we are going to be better, and that's what we've added a 9 out of 10 every week player to our first 11 effectively for the start of this season.
And you're talking about Fabinho being in that position. It's only recently where Jordan Henderson played that further forward role. So you've added a player with just superb tenacity up there pressing as well. And I mean, that link up with Salah's fantastic, because I remember Chris was doing stats and tactics on how we create space, and the way that happened is Trent to like overlap and blah blah blah, and then Salah drop off. Now we have another element to creating Salah space. So you're creating space for one of the most deadly finishers in world football right now, and you're letting Jordan Henderson further on his game and play better like that.
Watch it time and time again. So yeah, it was dead obvious to me in the Super Cup because I was in the corner of the ground when we were attacking, particularly toward the tail end of the match. Jordan Henderson just makes us drive and run down the right-hand channel, and you've got no choice but to track him. So because you know if they don't track him, you play the ball into him and Henderson's putting a cross in. So you track him. But if you track him, you leave Mo Salah. So, okay, so maybe you drop someone else in deep to help cover. So you've then got to watch Henderson, you watch Salah. Well, then you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold sort of 20, 25 yards from the dead ball line, completely unmarked, with an ability to whip a crossing. And that's what this is what's being added to that, the dimensions of play that we didn't have last season that we weren't as versed in. And this is all, again, mentioning, we'll talk about moving ahead to this next spell of games coming ahead. Mentioned there briefly, Naby Keita. You know, I think he'd have been in there. I think we'd have seen an even better Liverpool midfield. But we haven't been able to because of his injury problems. If, and it's a big if he's able to consistently stay fit, we're going to see another level from him as well. Let's look then ahead then to this next spell between now and the next international break. Newcastle at home, Saturday, the early kickoff. Champions League kicks off away to Napoli. It's actually four away games on the bounce, which is going to be a really interesting sort of mini test. Napoli away, pardon me, Chelsea away in the league, MK Dons away in the League Cup and Sheffield United away in the Premier League before Salzburg and Leicester, both at home, Champions League and Premier League. The level of opponent there, you know, I think Chelsea aren't quite the opponent they were this time last year, and we had them in a very similar spell around the Napoli game last time as well. That Napoli game, if we can improve, we need to improve from last year, Tom, because we were dog shit there away last year. If you can, I think we'll get a good sense of where we're at, to be perfectly honest, if we can come out even just that little four away game.
Well, it's another test that I'm welcoming, because it's another test that I put to Jürgen Klopp and go, let's see what you can do there, mate. Can you do this? And if you can, then it's another one of these bridges gap that you go, okay, we can do it away from home. We know we can do it at Anfield. We've done it at Anfield consistently. We wanted Anfield to be a fortress, and it is now. Away from home, you've got to go there, and I think Napoli's the big one, because you've got to improve on how we played, because it was dire. I think that was probably my worst game of the season. Mm-hmm. I know you can say about Red Star, but Napoli, we couldn't string a pass together, and we lost in that manner.
We put our
best
team out against Napoli.
Yeah,
we had Sturridge and Lallana and stuff in the game against Red Star.
That's what I mean.
We've been saying for years we haven't been able to judge our second string players too well, Ross, because we've come up. We had Chelsea in the League Cup last year. We keep coming up against top quality Premier League opposition in these early rounds of the domestic cups, and I think we've had to, not that we've thrown them, I don't necessarily, but you can lose those games as well. We have done. MK Dons is a good opportunity for us to see how Jürgen Klopp's value in that competition, and also how good, if he does choose to rotate heavily, we'll get a clearer sense of how good that team actually is.
Yeah, I was very happy when that draw came out. It's no disrespect to MK Dons, but you mentioned, you know, Chelsea, I think it was Leicester the year before, and Wolves in other competitions and stuff. And I don't think we threw the game at all. I think it was about managing the squad.
Yeah.
We didn't have a choice. You know, the Wolves away game that we all went to, going just putting kids out, or, you know, a second string team. It wasn't even a team. But a 16-year-old and Fabinho at centre half in that game, because we didn't have a choice, because the game's come thick and fast. And I think he has a tendency to kind of mix things up after the first international break and then going forward. I think it's a great opportunity for some of the youngsters to get in. And I think those fringe players that don't get the game time, you know, the likes of Shaqiri's, you know, he's alive, thank God. He's going to get a game time there, isn't he? But it all helps when you need those people to come in. You know, if you get an injury, at least you can say Shaqiri's, for example, has had some game time. It might be MK Dons, but at least you're kind of up to speed with what's going on.
Yeah.
And the drop-off, therefore, becomes a little bit shorter.
I think it's an interesting spell, and obviously fitness-dependent for Keita, for Oxlade-Chamberlain, for Jadon Shaqiri, potentially for Rhian Brewster as well. We might get our first look at him this season in a competitive game. The likes of James Milner's not really, you know, a couple of injury problems early on in the season. He was probably one of our best players in pre-season. No. Not got the games quite just yet. Gomez as well. You know, there's a big opportunity for these lads to go and prove their hunger. And I think, as I say, we'll get a clear sense of genuinely where we're at, because I would expect rotation. At least some rotation in this spell.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, for MK Dons, I'd want a complete change. I want to see these players and see how hungry they are to try and break into the first team, to make other players sweat a little and push them even more. And I think with someone like MK Dons, I think we're allowed to play a lot more kids and a lot more fringe players.
But how fringe? I mean, obviously we'll cover this when we get to it. Do we think he'll go? How fringe do we think? How fringe would you be going?
I think it'd be a large change. I think the onus is on the Champions League and the Premier League. I don't think you can overcome it. I'm particularly not that arsed about the domestic cups. I don't think Jürgen is either. I think he wants to concentrate on those other ones. I don't think if you can put, I don't know, you run three on for half an hour, then go and do it. Just keep them up to speed.
It's hard though, because you don't have much time to go on the training pitch with most of these players. You're going to have to change your system, because you don't have Bobby Firmino in there. You don't have the attacking threat of Sadio Mane. Maybe you do. Maybe Mane just goes, no, boss, I want to play.
I don't think we're changing the entire front three in these. I think
Origi probably comes in. I'd like to see Shaqiri come in there, but then. You don't want to lose this game as much as you want to rotate. You don't want to lose this game at all, and
there should be enough quality in there to win that game. Even should, change it all.
We should do, but then where's Lovren? Lovren's got to play surely. If he needs game time, so it's Lovren Gomez there, and then are you putting Lucci left? You're changing stuff up massively, and you can have a go at the team that comes out if you lose.
Well, it's fascinating, because I think this is where we're going to get such a clear indication of because we don't know how high we suspect. We say things like, I don't think Klopp cares about the domestic cup. We've got no idea. He might have decided in the summer, I don't think we're going to have the legs to mount a Premier League, Champions League run. So I'm going to go and scoop up as many bits of silverware this season just to keep us ticking over. Because that's my take on it. Is that my feeling is, I think we'll fall short this year because of the fitness thing, because off the back of an intense season last season with our front three all going on international duty on the back of a World Cup year the year before. If it was me, I would be going, I'd have identified Super Cup, Club World Cup Championship, and one of the league, probably the League Cup. Mm. And then once you've won the League Cup, you just kind of see where you are. And have you got enough then to push on for one more, whether it's the FA Cup, the League, or the Champions League? But we just don't know, and but I'm excited, because I think you're dead right. You know, Liverpool could start a team with Origi, Brewster, Shaqiri. It could be, you know, we could see Naby Keita starting these games. Yeah. Gomez could be starting these games. It's not going to be the years gone by of absolute no marks. You know, Cameron Brannigan and pick a genetic fullback that we've had at the club over the years. It's still going to be probably a good team, and if they're able to get through that, I think it could set us up quite nicely. But it's interesting nevertheless. If you're watching or listening, let us know your thoughts on how Liverpool are going to progress into this next spell of the season, and of course discussion points that we've covered so far. If you want more from us, more of these long form debate discussion things, as I say, the Monday final word is going to be free to us on YouTube this season. the midweek. So for all the midweek games and the games that we've discussed here, Napoli coming up, MK Dons as well, Salzburg, Champions League stuff, all that, for those final words, these type of shows are going to be on the redmentv.com. There's the Reds News Roundup that goes on there. There's the Around the League podcast, Stats and Tactics from Chris Page, and a whole host of other things as well. So head over there to the redmentv.com, start your free month trial, get a real sense of what's going on there, see how you feel about all the content, loads of exclusive interviews and all that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, we are here for you to cover you with all the best Liverpool coverage this season and beyond. Gentlemen, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Feeling really good about everything the face of it being a shit international break. Gathered ourselves Newcastle at the weekend. Well, if you cover for that as well. And thank you very much for watching, for listening and for subscribing. We'll see you all soon. Ta-ra.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.